Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
All right. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. You know, one of the things I've run into with recently is I won an argument, which doesn't happen very often. And it wasn't a heated, bar fight kind of argument. It was we're in a small team I'm working with in a product, a development situation, and it's a startup and they're hiring people and they wanted to hire somebody to be their director of quality and has a big role in reliability. And the candidate, and there've been a number of candidates we've interviewed, and one of them was close as far as the team was concerned. And I thought, no, not really. And it was concerning the approach to building a quality program or a quality and reliability program and the associated culture with it was the way I framed the role, the presenting task to the candidate was, we're a startup. We do a few different things and we're talking about quality. We're talking about reliability, yet we don't have the process, and whether we need ISO 9000 or we need some other standard, we need the procedures. We need somebody to help us develop them and implement them and manage them. And that was kind of the presenting question really for main overarching task for the position. And so back to winning the argument is one of the leads in the interview, one of the more senior people in the organization, and maybe it's because he had a mechanical engineering background or not, but not to pick on it. It could have been anybody.
Ooh,
so it wasn't the marketing guy. Which was interesting. The marketing people were not involved in the discussion at all. They weren't on the interview list. And I think that might be something I need to change going on other candidates. But anyway, this one gentleman thought this was an excellent candidate. He was very rigid, very bureaucratic. He would bring in, and those were his words, he would bring in the process and we would use it. And I thought, for some people, provide a structure and you're happy. And that was this guy's case. And I didn't think that was right. I don't think that's a way to build a culture. I think it's a way to build workarounds and shadow processes to avoid the quality program. I've just seen that happen way too often where you have a rigid program and the quality folks are seen as the enemy to be avoided.
Oh yeah. I have some thoughts I'd like to share on this as well. I think that any process, reliability process, quality process, any business process needs to be shared development. And people have to have some degree of, to use the phrase, skin in the game, or some commitment. You want people to be involved. You want them to be passionate about their work. And if you dictate a process or dictate steps that they didn't have any involvement with, the pushback is almost a natural phenomenon.
Right.
Whereas if you can get people's involvement in developing a process, they're going to go execute it without a lot of oversight. And so I completely agree with the concept that you've posed, and I would shy away from or discourage an external process being enforced on a company, and I would encourage developing processes together in some type of team framework to have people be involved and thereby become committed to the execution.
Yeah, and I mean I'm thinking of this company in the last couple of months. One of the things we were starting to do is recognize mostly because we started building prototypes, is recognizing problems that the person seeing the problem really couldn't solve on the spot. And up until that point, it was such a small team that they just fixed things. And at some point, the director of engineering said, enough, we need to lock down the bill of materials. You can't change things anymore. We're trying to build these things and order parts and so on. And everybody kind of like, oh, okay, I understand. It took a while to do it. And it took consistent enforcement by the chief engineer, essentially, to make that happen. But I think people quickly realized the benefit of it, especially when we're actually starting to build products and make that work. But back to the finding issues I started just asking around, how are you keeping track of these issues? How do we make sure that the things you're spotting get resolved or to the right people? And there was a bit of, oh, I know who to talk to, or I have my own list, or I have this part. And I'm like, you know, let's think about how to make this more efficient, right? Let's make this more streamlined. So there's one place to go. And you know, of course I'm thinking about setting up a fracas system. But I didn't just say, all right, here's a fracas system, let's make it work. It was, how can this be a service to you? How can this help you get your job done? And that create, just in those short conversations, it created enough going, oh, well, we have this Jira system the software guys use, let's use that. I didn't recommend that, it came up. Then two other people said, well, let's try it. And we turned it on and they put a few things and goes, oh, well, it needs this and this. And so they got a hold of the IT guy who added those fields, and now they're off and running, and it's become a standard part of the weekly meeting to go over the Jira items and what's the status, who's got that, what's the next step, and let's close them as we go. It's just integrated into the culture, and I don't run it. I don't manage it.
Very good. Excellent. It aligns to something that that I've used, looking at, again, from a reliability point of view. When I'm teaching at implementing FMEA, I want to bring the high-risk issues to management for review from FMEAs. And that's a very important concept. But I don't want to set up a brand new meeting for this, where you get pushback from management. So I say, let's take the already existing meeting that you have, like a fracas meeting or reviewing field issues meeting, and let's tack on a few minutes each month or each week or every other week to review high-risk issues from FMEA. That allows going with the flow, so to speak, as opposed to creating some brand new mechanism. So I'm just trying to offer some ideas here as to how we can integrate reliability, what we want from reliability, into the already existing structures within the company.
Yeah. So I think there's two points that come to mind for me. And one of them is my experience at Hewlett-Packard was of the 50 or so different product divisions that existed there. There were almost always a quality manager, usually customer facing and dealing with supplier issues and customer issues and field issues, may or may not have been involved at all with the development of a product in any significant way. Almost no reliability engineers. Yet what I found was that didn't matter whether you had a good reliability or quality program in the product development process or in your organization. It was more related to what was the culture. How integrated was the reviewing high-risk items? Independent of whether you were there or not, or is that FMEA is a great tool for help us identify high-risk items, and the product manager or the program team or somebody says, let's review those. And it gets built into their ongoing business process. But same with design margin constraints, understanding the environment, where it's going, what testing we need to do. None of that requires a reliability or quality engineer. We facilitate those things. We help those things. But it's the successful organizations have a culture that just enables those appropriate questions and processes to exist versus it being, oh, we have to go to this meeting because the quality guy called it kind of approach. I don't know if I'm being clear on the difference in culture.
No, you are. In fact, the question becomes, what is the culture? How is it developed? What are the what's the essence of it? And how do you create a good culture? And reliability managers can be big helpers, but so can reliability engineers.
Yep.
And that's the topic. There's another aspect of the conversation. As a manager, I've always believed that you, first of all, you hire good people, but then you support them as opposed to dictate to them.
Mm-hmm.
And because people will do their best thinking in the right environment. If you can create a really good environment where people are excited to come to work and they feel like they're accomplishing something, it's almost unstoppable. If you don't have that environment, it's hard to dictate it. And so the question becomes, how do you create that positive energy, creativity, and where people want to come to work and want to participate? That's the discussion that I'd love to continue having.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm going to backtrack just a bit, though, because I think we would agree, as most of our listeners would agree, is that having some processes, whether it's an FMEA, just the process of the FMEA itself, or a fracas system to keep track of defects and to the resolution, or I'm thinking of quality CAPA program, right? The corrective action and preventative tracking back to your vendors and making sure things are resolved sufficiently. I think having processes is important. But I think what we started off with, Carl, is that it's the approach to building them, but it's with an aim so that it's well understood and there's buy-in, and that it's, oh, that's what we need to do. That makes sense. Versus, oh, that's what we need to do because Bill told us we have to do that. I think it comes down in the approach of how you build these things and how you implement them. Changes that discussion from an imposed one versus a organically, yeah, that's what we need to do.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, organically. And I don't want to come across, and I can hear, you know, somebody might say, well, wait a minute, what about discipline? Don't you have to be disciplined to the process?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, once you've developed together a really good process, then yes, you do need to be disciplined. We need to do the right things at the right time to the right quality objectives. That's necessary. So I think we really have a two-step that we're talking about, is together get people involved in developing good processes, keep them involved, always ask for feedback from people. But yes, in addition to that, once you've got your processes, have a certain degree of organization and discipline and follow-up so that you do implement at the right times to the right quality.
Yeah. Well, that's this organization I'm working with, this startup, is this director of engineering is so supportive. As soon as he got wind that we were setting up a fracas system and the JIRA program, somebody would raise an issue. And his first question was, is it in JIRA? Right?
Mm-hmm.
He was just immediately reinforcing, put it there. So that we don't lose that information or knowledge. And so he could have said, oh, what's the fix? Is it fixed yet? Right. Then people would stop bringing problems to him. If he was overbearing on, you know, punishing the messenger, basically, he could have destroyed it, but he was very, very supportive, right from the start. And it's not like I sat down and talked with him about how to support it. I think he gets it and understands that we need these processes, and that he can make or break the value of those processes by forcing workarounds or forcing or encouraging and reinforcing the need to use those processes, in which the latter is what he did naturally.
And this is why I think it really is a two-step, two-phase process, which is developing good processes first and then implementing them. One of the problems, and we'll get to this someday when we can podcast about standards, but one of the problems with certain standards is they say you have to have a process.
Thou shall
have a process. Yeah. And then the entire standard is around implementing, making sure that you do every step of this process. You could have a absolutely lousy process and you'll pass the standard.
That's right.
If you implement it perfectly and document it and do all the other things. And so I don't want to go that route. I want to have really good processes and then implement them well. So that's just a side conversation that we'll have at some point on standards.
Well, there's also, in both setting them up and implementing them, there's this element of fear that, and I think it's Deming, one of his 14 points is drive, I think it's phrased drive out fear or something to that effect.
Yeah, I had called it up when we started talking about this to have it available. Eliminate fear, point number 8.
Yeah, eliminate fear. If somebody's afraid to say, hey, this isn't working, they won't say it, right? They'll say to themselves after it blows up in the field and it becomes a big issue is, well, I told you so, or I knew that, right? And it's demoralizing in so many different ways. But that goes to the culture. Right, you have to be able to speak up to in setting processes in place that are reinforced and encouraged to be used on a regular basis provides so many different mechanisms to drive out fear. You know what to expect. You know the stand. You know what's the protocol. You know what the steps are involved. It's a well designed process. It's not onerous and it's useful.
Yeah, in fact, I'll put the Deming 14 points in the show notes. Point number 1 is create a constant purpose toward improvement. Mm-hmm. And what comes to mind here for me, there's a lot to this, but one of the things that comes to mind is if people feel that they're making a difference, they're actually involved in improving the product, that's a huge part of the culture.
Yep.
And this is one of the key elements of very successful companies is people come to work with a passion to do the right thing and to make life better for customers as opposed to just coming to work to perform the job.
Yep, very much so. Yeah, it sounds like we're having some more network issues, but it sounds more on the source end.
Yes. Sorry, I'm going to have a swig of water.
Here no problem. But you're exactly, and it's probably why Deming put it up first. It's the a purpose for continuous improvement is versus the purpose of just move it along. And I've seen that so strongly in an organization where it was end of quarter push. The whole organization in the culture was make the numbers at all costs. And they were doing all kinds of tricks and shenanigans to make that happen. And a new CEO came in and said, enough, stop it. Don't do that. And we took a hit one quarter and then it never looked back.
Fantastic.
But he was everywhere the last week on the quarter. You know, why are you doing that? What's going on here? What's this big push and rush? Stop it. Don't do it. Ship it next week. He was on the ground in their face on the loading docks going, no. That's an end of quarter push. Don't do it. And it took him and his staff essentially being everywhere and just reinforcing that message. No, he was like, I remember him saying it. No, you don't understand. I mean it. Don't ship that.
Very good. Well, you know, the another one I was just looking at while you were talking here, trying to find it on here, and I is to avoid the use of slogans.
Yeah, I was going to call you out on that. You must be near a river somewhere because you did swim upstream last episode.
And, yes.
And you had a few of them this episode. Water related. Right. You must be off kayaking again.
We were doing some kayaking in the last few days.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for good good analogies.
All right, good.
But this whole subject of slogans is another one that I try to avoid, and I think a good culture avoids the use of overuse of slogans.
Oh, my favorite is work harder or work smarter, yes. Not harder.
Work smarter.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Well, exactly am I going to do that, you know? Okay.
Right.
Yeah. No, I think there's there's 14 points in Deming's treaty there. We could probably do multiple episodes in each one of them. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the idea, I think the main point we're trying to make here, Carl, is that keep in mind that you're trying to create a culture where, as you phrased it, Carl, is people are passionate to come to work and are enabled to make a difference, right? They actually do that. They actually can and do make a difference on a day-to-day basis with their work. So much of what we do involves the creation of the environment, the culture, to make that happen. And so when I was evaluating this candidate, it was, yes, you really know those procedures. Yes, you can implement them. You have the force of will, it appears, that you could make that happen. Is that the right thing for this company? And that's the point I made. And it was seen as, by some people, that's what we need. We just need the structure and we'll line up to it. And if your overall culture would benefit from that, then that might be the right choice. Now, this organization was much more collegial, open doors and discussions, regular. Nobody was afraid to say, hey, we need to think about this or that at any of the meetings. It was just more of a participatory environment. And I thought imposing stringent procedures on it would destroy it. And
right.
And so it has to fit. And then my preference really is to go with the soft touch and build organically and build it into the organization. But that's just my preference.
That's always been my preference too, Fred. I think that's the one that survives long term.
Mm-hmm.
It builds the right values that I admire, values of trust. I try to avoid, and I encourage people to avoid looking over someone's shoulder all the time to see in the minutia of detail and find ways to encourage and inspire people.
Yep.
As
yep.
opposed to dictating all the details that they have to do.
Yep.
So there's a lot to the subject. It's a great topic.
All right, good. Yeah, well, we got some more candidates coming in, so hopefully we find the right one. I'm sure we will. It's a fun group, and they've it's fun that they're thinking through the culture this early in their life as a company. So I think they've got a bright future. So anyway, I look forward to the show notes, Carl. And if anybody wanted to chime in on this or had some thoughts of what's the right approach, especially from a quality and reliability point of view, please let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's comment fields and ways to get in touch with us. And we'd love to hear from you. And with that, Carl, I'll let you get back to your kayaking, and hopefully you're not swimming with the alligators or anything.
No,
like
I'm
that.
Trying to avoid that.
Okay.
All right, Fred. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.